Insertion of the new implant went easily. The access port still met all specs, so all Kylara needed was the device itself. She expected the moment of nauseating disorientation, the strange visual auras, the itch in her nose. Before she could access the implant, she had to go through the initialization protocols, the longest part of an insertion, and then the implant unfolded in her mind like a flower. Each petal a gateway to another database. The displays flickered past, the communications links, now activated only for the clinic units, let her answer the questions without speaking aloud.
Checks out. Any problems of your end?
Kai blinked at the technician. They both knew, because she was sending it, that she was seeing him with a vibrating pink halo. And they also knew this was a transient visual phenomenon common to implant insertions, like the other sensory auras she was having. The smell of freshly ground pepper, the odd effect on all sounds. It would be gone after a good night's sleep, during which time the implant and her biological brain would have some kind of serious discussion without her consciousness around to kibitz.
No problems.
Good. Call me at once if you experience sensory auras tomorrow, or any difficulties with coordination, balance, after 1 hour from now. My recommendation is that you go to sleep as soon as you can.
I will.
Kai's father took her back to the main house, where she staggered only a couple of times going down the hall to her room. She remembered her first insertion experience very clearly. She had been 7, getting a child's school expansion kit, and she had insisted that her balance wasn't affected. She didn't need to lie down and take a nap. All the way to the ground when she fell off the pony. "I'm fine," she'd said, lying on the ground and looking up at a pony hazed in a supernatural golden glow, its wings waving gently in the breeze. "My pony has wings," she'd said. No one had believed her. She'd woken from that nap with a bruise on her rump and her brothers prancing around the room waving their arms, pretending to be flying ponies. Enhanced memory was one side effect of implants and their insertion. She pulled off her clothes, put on a gown, turned off the light, and lay down. She had been sure she wouldn't sleep, but the moment her head hit the pillow, she was out. She woke, remembering no dreams, at first disoriented because sunlight played on the opposite wall from the garden window in her room, and she expected instead the cold, dim light of a winter dawn in the capital. Misery hit her again, and she rolled over, burying her face in the pillow. Her career, her hopes, her friends. Hal. He wouldn't even know what happened. She hadn't actually started crying when something landed with a thump on her back.
Rise and shine, lazy bones. You've got to hit the books.
Kai rolled out of bed, threw the offending roll of towels back at her brother, wet, he must have just come in from swimming, and stalked into the fresh air with as much dignity as possible. Her implant offered the time, the temperature, the humidity, water temperature of the fresher, her own pulse and respiration if she wanted it. She didn't. She ate a hasty breakfast in a corner of the kitchen and then settled down to the pile of data cubes her father had left for her to read. Everything there was to know about Glennis Jones, about the route she was to take, everything she needed to know about the Vata transport codes. At intervals, her attention drifted to her disgrace, but she yanked it back to the matter at hand. She could not think about it, any of it, without going to pieces. If she was to be a cargo ship captain, she had better things to do than feel sorry for herself. The implant fed her accessory information whenever she asked. She was deep in the revised space regulations applicable to licensed carriers Class C and below, when her father and brother came home for lunch.
How's it going?
Kai pointed to a stack.
These are done. I'm into space regs. Why on earth did they restrict Class Bs from carrying nutrient components? Seems to me that's what they're ideally suited for.
Politics. But I'm not supposed to say that.
Her father gave San a look.
P&L. They've moved into nutrient component production over on Chelsea.
They transport this stuff very efficiently in purpose-built Class Ds. They're just protecting their investment.
Closing out competitors, both producers and shippers.
Sam.
They're our competitors. I don't see why we can't be plain-spoken, at least at home.
They're also our friends. You might have married the girl.
Not me!
Kai watched this interchange with interest. San was arguing with her father. That was new.
Lunch.
Her father led the way to the veranda. At midday, it was shady, breezy, scented with roses and jasmine. Her mother didn't appear. She often skipped lunch with the family. Kai wasn't hungry. She'd done nothing all morning but read. But she picked at a salad.
You should get out a little, Kai. If you don't eat, your mother will pester me.
I need to finish these.
Not today. I didn't think you'd be half so far along. Take the afternoon off.
2 hours later, Kai lay stretched on a towel by the pool. An hour's swim had worked out kinks she hadn't realized she had, and now she dozed in the warm shade. Her father had been right. She had needed the break.
Kailara Vata, what do you think you're doing?
That voice nearly sent her rolling into the pool in a defensive maneuver. Aunt Gracie Lane. Aunt Gracie Lane, who disapproved of idleness at any time, and also had strong views on appropriate bathing costume.
Anyone could see you.
Anyone who was a member of the family or a guest. Possibly a lascivious gardener peeking over the wall of the pool enclosure, but certainly no one else.
I'm resting after swimming, Aunt Gracie.
You're lazing about doing nothing useful. Get some proper clothes on and get busy. You're supposed to be helping your mother arrange your wardrobe.
Kai's mother, just coming to the pool behind Aunt Gracie, shrugged. Kai scrambled to her knees with the towel clutched to her.
Yes, Aunt Gracie.
I would have thought the academy would teach you some discipline, but clearly, I suppose that's why you quit.
Too many things wrong with that to argue. Kai held the towel between her and Aunt Gracie's disapproval and sidled around, pricking herself on one of the gardenia bushes, to back gingerly toward the house. The moment Aunt Gracie transferred her gaze to something else, she whipped the towel all the way around her and scuttled for the veranda. Some things never changed. Clad in slacks and a shirt, she emerged from her room to hear Aunt Gracie's voice down the hall.
Don't do something about that girl, Myris. You'll be sorry. I can't believe you and Gerard are actually letting her go off alone, unsupervised.
Kai thought of running away, sneaking out through her window. But Aunt Gracie would certainly have something to say about that, too. It was going to be a very long 4 days. 3.8, her implant said. The next day, Kai flew the single seat herself to Harbortown, where Bond Tailoring's senior fitter checked her mother's measurements and admitted that they'd been correct. Kai picked out ship boots, dock boots, formal and informal shoes for non-business wear. Despite her mother's complaints about her shape, she was close enough to stock measurements that only slight alterations would fit her for most things. The captain's tunic, however, had to be custom-made.
Still, that cuts a day off our estimate. Only 4 items. We'll have them tomorrow evening.
What time?
Oh, you should plan on picking them up the next day, just in case.
Kai left the shop with her footwear, stopped by Amerson's for some personal items her mother didn't need to know about. If she was going to be off on her own alone, and not under military discipline, she could choose the lotions and scents she preferred, ignoring her mother's ideas of appropriateness. Her crew would just have to put up with it. Then she walked back up the street to catch the shuttle to the airport. She was back home by lunch, or rather, back at the home airfield. She stopped by the office to tell her father when the clothes would be ready.
Gracie's on the warpath about you.
I know.
You might want to do your bookwork here today.
Thank you. Where's an empty workstation?
San's off checking yield in the young plantation, so you can use his office. Don't answer the phone.
Kai dumped her shoes and boots in the corner of San's office and pulled up more of the data she needed on his station. Facts flowed into her mind. The history of the Glennis Jones, details of her last trip through maintenance, background information on the crew, details of the contract. She hardly moved until her father opened the door to tell her it was time for dinner.
I'm not sure what Gracie's got in mind for you, Kailara, but you probably should come back here tomorrow. Or just go out. You won't have a chance to snorkel or ride again for a long time.
Would that be all right?
You've been working hard. I'm sure you can decide how much more work you need to do. Take the day if you feel like it.
Kai dreaded the thought of dinner, but Aunt Gracie, her mother told her, had retired to her room with a headache. Kai thought about a late swim in the pool, but remembered in time that the guest room had a clear view of the pool and sound carried over water. Instead, she rummaged in her closet and found her snorkeling gear, then linked her implant to the home library's marine database for an instant to download whatever she might need. Early the next morning, she was down at the shore shortly after dawn, squinting into the light to check the buoys supporting the protective nets that kept out the larger marine predators. How long had it been since she'd had a day to herself, a day free to do whatever she wanted? She couldn't remember. Years, anyway. Every brief vacation from the academy had been filled with duties, courtesy calls on this or that family member, dinners, parties, required shopping trips. Now the day stretched before her, empty as the beach itself. Little waves slid meekly up onto the sand, leaving interlocking arcs of wet behind them. Squirts of water revealed the hiding places of burrowing clams. Kai struggled into her wetsuit, clipped on her safety beacon, put on gloves and flippers, and almost fell on her nose when she started toward the water and caught a flipper in the sand. Once in the water, she moved slowly out to the first of the broad, knobby coral heads, where she knew she'd find a flurry of brilliantly colored small fish. Her implant gave her the names. A black tooth undulated into her view. She turned to face it. It retreated to deeper water, then dove into the sandy bottom, fluffing sand over itself. Her implant marked that location. She would be careful not to step on it. She had set the timer for 2 hours. When the implant beeped, she stroked back to shallow water, then stood up. She felt heavier. She always hated coming out of the water once she was in. Her father had used that as a metaphor for growing up, leaving the easy support of a family and carrying her own weight, but she resented his lecture. Unless it meant you could drown in your support system. And this day, she simply wanted to enjoy the beauty. She looked again at the lagoon and thought about the rest of the day. She could saddle a horse and ride out through the plantation, or she could stay here. She queried her implant. Aunt Gracie was on the move. All the horses were in use. Half annoyed and half relieved, Kai waded back into the water and let herself rest on its buoyancy. She wasn't hungry, and the suit had its own water supply system. When she tired of the water, she pulled herself back up to the beach, to the shade under the trees, scooped out a hollow in the sand, and took a nap. She woke to the turquoise and pink sky of evening and stared a long time at the colors as they deepened before she turned her back on them to head for the house. At breakfast, the morning Kai was leaving, Aunt Gracie handed over a gaily decorated sack.
I made this just for you.
Ugh. Kai almost dropped it when she took it. She looked in. There, swathed in bright-colored flowery wrapping paper, were the unmistakable shapes of three of Aunt Gracie's special fruit spice cakes.
You'll be gone a long time, and I always say that a taste of home is the best thing to cure homesickness.
Aunt Gracie's fruit spice cakes were, without doubt, the densest mass of flavorless, tooth-breaking pseudo-foodstuff in the galaxy. She produced them at intervals for birthdays and holidays, and the family disposed of them discreetly as soon as she was out of sight. Even a sliver of Aunt Gracie's product left Kai with a day or so of gastric uneasiness.
Thanks.
Kai could always leave them under her bed as insect-repellent blocks. She'd done that with the ones Aunt Gracie had given her each year to take to the academy.
I know how rushed it can be when people leave on a long assignment. So let's just let Janine put them in the car for you right this minute.
Kai looked at San, and his lips were folded tight, but his eyes danced mischief.
Thank you.
Kai handed the sack to the maid and resigned herself to dumping Aunt Gracie's creations into some unsuspecting trash container on the way to her command. She was not going to spend 5 kilos of her personal baggage allowance on inedible crud. She finished her juice and made her escape, not without kissing that withered old cheek, to the car, where her father waited to drive her to the airfield.
If you're planning to dump it somewhere, don't do it inside of anyone who might, by any conceivable means, know anyone who knows us. Your Aunt Gracie's connections are legendary. The only reason she doesn't know the whole truth about your resignation is that it's a state secret. But she suspects, and she'll worm it out of someone inside another week, I'm sure. I don't want to have to deal with her if she finds out you've tossed her cakes in the trash. It was bad enough when she found out you'd been leaving them under your bed.
How did she find that out?
Bribed the staff, I shouldn't doubt. But look at it this way. Anything is a commodity to someone. In a very large universe, your Aunt Gracie's cannonballs might be someone else's favorite underwear.
It was the first time she'd laughed since her private disaster. As the car stopped, Gerard leaned over to give her a kiss.
Courage, Kai. You've got what you need to start a good life. Go.
Gaspard was waiting on the apron. He looked up from checking the oil.
You look better. So, what did the family do for you?
Kai took her duffel from old George and slung it into the baggage compartment.
I'm taking Glennis Jones to the scrapyard. It will keep me out of the public eye.
The boring start to a dull, boring career as a truck driver in space, she did not say. She looped the tie-downs around the two bags.
And give you a chance to show your talents.
Gaspard went on with the pre-flight check while she looked around, trying to fill her memory with the home she would not see for months, maybe years, maybe ever again, space being what it was, and life being less certain than she'd thought the last time she left.
Well, assuming I have any.
What talents did it take to captain an experienced crew on a boring one-way run? Now, if she could figure out a way to avoid scrapping the ship and surprise the family with a great triumph of trading...
Don't fish, Kai. It doesn't become you.
Right. And we shall hope I don't exercise my talent for leaping in to help.
At least not until you're a little more experienced. Though you could help me, if you would, by agreeing to co-pilot on the way in. There's some serious weather between us and the mainland.
Kai had seen the satellite images. A cold front nosing under the warm sea air and lifting clouds to towering heights.
Of course.
Good, then. Let's be going. The front's gonna toss us around some.
Kai climbed into the co-pilot seat and concentrated on her part of the checklist as they finished pre-flight. The first hour in the air, retracing her recent flight home, was almost pure sightseeing. The colors of the water, changing with depth, with the shadows of clouds, the reefs, the various islands. Puffy cumulus clouds arrayed in rows along the wind's path, all white and innocent. But ahead, a line of taller clouds, their ramparts denser. Kai had no time to brood as she helped Gaspard ease the plane through the front's turbulence, and only the navigation instruments could have told where they were. The city lay under dense clouds, spitting cold rain, just as it had been when she left. At least here there was little turbulence, and landing offered no problems. Gaspard turned onto the ramp that led to the private terminal, and then again to reach the Vata hangars.
Good job, Kai. You'll be fine with old Glennis. Shouldn't wonder if you don't start your own private fleet with her or something.
Am I that predictable?
Have to start somewhere, after all.
Gaspard winked. Then he turned back to the mechanic who had come out to greet him.
My first task is to get rid of Aunt Gracie's cakes.
Kai hadn't asked Gaspard to let her toss them out into the sea. Gaspard might be your friend, but he might also be one of Aunt Gracie's spies. At no point in the route from the airfield to the shuttle field was she alone and in reach of a disposal chute. The 5 kilos dragged at her arm. She had to carry them herself to have the chance to lose them. But a woman in a Vata transport captain's uniform carrying a bright flower-patterned bag, obviously heavy, would be noticed and remembered.
Oh, blast Aunt Gracie!
Vata captains, she had been told, did not ride commercial shuttles to orbit. At least not here, where Vata maintained its own small fleet of surface-to-orbit transport. As a captain, she had her own tiny compartment, outfitted as a workstation, with stowage for her duffel in the same compartment. She remembered her first trip alone to the orbital station when she'd been 13 and headed for 3 months as the lowest apprentice on Turbit. She'd been crammed into crew seating with four other family apprentices, each going on a different ship, and 15 regular crew, and she'd been stiff, as well as scared, by the time they arrived. This was much better. She spent the time reviewing crew information, committing faces and names to her implant's perfect memory. At the Vata orbital station, she debarked ahead of the rest and caught the first tram outbound for the docks. She had given up on Aunt Gracie's cakes for now. She turned them over to the Vata handler along with the rest of her luggage. It would reappear in her cabin aboard. All she had in hand was the tidy little captain's case with its data links, command wand, and orders. She tried to sneak up on Glennis without being spotted, but Vata security was far too good for that. She had an escort all the way from the Vata gates to the boarding platform, and when she got there, Gary Tobai left off polishing the Vata family seal on the rail and turned to her.
Well, if it isn't the newest captain in Vata fleet. Mouth got you in trouble again, did it?
All I said was, if you know that much, you know I didn't do anything wrong.
Wrong? No, wrong way to do something right, maybe. I thought you were supposed to be our white hope with the military.
Well, I thought so, too. So when I found something that needed to be fixed...
You jumped in and fixed it. I understand that, but you could have anticipated it would cause trouble.
I was trying to avoid trouble.
Kai didn't even try to explain how convoluted the right procedures were and why she'd chosen to work through contacts the family had given her. He wanted to condescend, so he would, no matter what she said.
You were not bred to avoid trouble. Your family takes it on, shakes it like a dog shaking a rat, and tosses it to one side. As you did, Captain.
Captain? He actually called me Captain. So, now that I have a ship, what can you tell me about her?
You haven't looked at the listing?
Kai closed her eyes.
Glennis Jones, 300 meters overall length, 200 meters beam, keel plate laid in Bramley's Yards 87 years ago. Refitted in 04 and 38. Drives replaced in 43 with expanded cruising range. Fully loaded to 179 days or 215 days empty and crewed. She has two main cargo holds, three auxiliary holds, and no auto-loading capability. The largest container that will fit through the main cargo hatch is 3 meters by 2.7 meters, and standard access now is 3 by 4, which limits her pretty much to specialty cargo. She can't take loose bulk cargo like grain, another limitation. She's been used to haul perishables, but on her last trip, the refrigerating system broke down, and Vata had to pay the shipper for the goods, as well as a penalty for non-delivery, and insurance didn't cover it all. The company's out 700,000 credits. Repair of the refrigeration system would cost another 500,000, so ships decided to use her for base supply runs and sell her for scrap when her inspection ran out.
Kai paused for breath. Tobai had been nodding approval, but when she paused, he didn't say anything.
So now she's due for recertification, but she probably wouldn't pass, and they're shipping her off to Lastway. I know all that. All that's in the listing. What I don't know is what her other peculiarities are. Things not in the list. I'm sure you do, because you've probably crawled all over her with a microscanner.
You're right about that. I've shipped on her 5 times in all, but not in the past 7 years. So I had to renew my acquaintance with the lady.
This old...
Now, don't say that. It never does for the captain to badmouth the ship. Ships are sensitive.
Ships were metal, ceramic, polymer machines. They had brains of a sort, but no feelings. Kai had been told that the first time she came aboard a ship. But however sensitive the ship wasn't, Gary Tobai was, and she wanted him on her side.
Sorry, I didn't mean anything by it.
Better not to say it at all, then. Now, what you need to know is that we have to load the starboard main hold first, then the port auxiliary, starboard auxiliary, main port, and the third auxiliary, if we use it, last. We need at least a half point more mass to starboard or she won't stay in trim. That last engine refit did something screwy to the frame, though no one will admit it. There's also a problem with the attitude jets, but all I have is hearsay. Quince could tell you more about that.
Dad says they've assembled a cargo for us. Are you satisfied with it?
All done, including crew traded. How much are you reserving for crew shares?
A scrap run, one way. What's the usual split?
I'd recommend the third auxiliary hold. That's 15% of the total. Limited to luxuries is what I told him. Retain 4% for Captain Space and split the remaining 11% by seniority.
I've already bought in for 10%. Should I donate the 4%?
No. Crew would wonder what was going on if you didn't claim it. We're going to have trouble enough. Your father had to pay a surcharge for a one-way trip since they can't make a profit on the way back. Whether you fill it or not, reserve it.
Fine. She could put Aunt Gracie's miserable cakes in there and no one would ever know. If you come across something that would be prime at Last Way, let me know. I'm up to my nose in chores, and we're supposed to push for a quick departure.
That's what I like to see. Captain's doing more than sitting in the captain's chair.
When she got to her cabin, she found a stack of packages. Presents from her parents, from her brother San, from... She stared at the card that had come with a child's kit for a military ship, a Dragon-class cruiser.
McRoberts sent me a present?
Ty ripped open the envelope. In the same precise, blocky letters that had once informed her, in her first winter as a cadet, that she had two demerits for the state of her bunk, he offered best wishes.
If you ever need to let us know about something, remember that dragons breathe fire. I will be most interested in your progress with this model.
That was beyond odd. Kai stared at it a long moment before putting the model kit on the back of her closet shelf on top of the note. She could not imagine what she would need to tell the space service, besides something rude and anatomically impossible. MacRobert's rumored connection to covert operations ghosted through her mind, but she'd always figured that was cadet gossip. She couldn't see why he would pick a disgraced exile like her to work with, even if it were true. She turned to the other presents. Her parents had, with their usual practical approach, sent her a sizable letter of credit for Last Way. For clothes, her mother suggested. Her father, who signed it last, said, "For yourself." Kai measured the amount against the upgrades the ship needed and came up very short. Still, it was a start. San had sent her a polished tickseed. It fit comfortably in the palm of her hand, its glossy surface a rich red-brown. She put it in her pocket, where she could touch it often. The letter of credit she put in the lockdown of her desk.
Captain, need a time for cast-off, Captain.
Kai had forgotten that very elementary detail. She was the one who had to say cast off at 1400, or whatever she chose. She opened the door to find Riel Amat, her senior pilot, waiting with a data board. He looked a little older than the picture she had in the crew list.
We can be ready by 1320, ma'am, or any time after. Traffic control says they're expecting some congestion later, but should be clear until 1500. They're asking for a time.
Advice?
1430 would be about right, ma'am, with a little leeway each way.
1430 it is, then, Riel. Thanks. Anything else I need to be doing?
There's paperwork on the bridge, sign-offs and stuff. Crew's all aboard, accounting's cleared. They just need your signature.
I'll be right there.
Amat nodded and turned away. Kailara glanced at herself in the mirror. The uniform did fit well, no doubt about it. Still, the whole situation felt unreal. She, Kailara Vata, was about to go into space as a captain of her own, well, her family's, ship. And she didn't even know enough to set a departure time without asking her pilot.
What am I thinking?
And yet, she was the captain, and she was going. Excitement stirred. For the first time, the thought of her former classmates brought no pain. They would be sitting in class or studying, and she was on her way into space. It hardly seemed a fit punishment. Quincy Robin, whose space-fresh skin belied her 60-plus years of experience, met Kai in the starboard passage as she headed for the bridge.
I heard about you, youngster. Good work.
Not everyone thinks so.
What did you want? A ship and praise? They don't give ships to people for doing bad work.
Even old ones about to go to scrap?
Someone has to take them. She's not so bad. She was a good ship in her time. Did you know she pioneered the Foregone Run? I wasn't on her then, but a few years later I served on her when her class was the backbone of the Vada fleet. Go anywhere, do anything. That was Glennis in her youth. And middle age, for that matter. It's a shame she's going to scrap.
What would she need to pass inspection?
Depends on whose inspection. She's safe for this trip, in the hands of people with some sense. Her drives are good enough. Her attitude controls, though, really need to be replaced. The last three adjustments haven't held more than a few months each. For slaughter key registration, she'd need an upgraded environmental system. The one she's got is safe, but not up to modern standards. The new regulations they passed last year will catch up with her. Her reserve tanks are 500 liters short. Then her navigation system is out of spec for age. Thing is, it's full of proprietary data and software that would be hard to transfer to a newer one.
So what would it cost to bring her up?
You could probably do it for 5 to 7 million. And out on a frontier world like last way, she'll bring 10 to 11 as scrap, and some idiot may try to keep her whole and run her even farther out in the borderlands. I wouldn't. Not without some work.
Old Farangiavata had started with a beat-up tramp cargo ship when the scattering suddenly pulled away the best ships and left the rest of human-occupied space in disarray. Miss Molly still belonged to the family, displayed in the number one repair slot. Kai, along with her generation of school kids, had clambered through Miss Molly's narrow passages and old-fashioned ladders and listened to the story of those perilous first voyages. And now she had a ship of her own, bound for scrap or glory. It seemed an easy choice. Easy, tradition said, was also stupid. It wasn't really her ship. It belonged, as its registration stated, to Vata Transport, not Kai Vata. Kai settled into the captain's chair on the bridge, inserted her command wand, and started working on the many, many, many forms that captains had to sign off before a ship could be cleared for castoff. Between these chores, she glanced at the bridge crew. Cheryl Donster, navigator, 7 years with Vata Transport, formerly on Agnes Perry. She was heavy-set, light-haired, and staring intently at a screen full of numbers. Kai had no idea what the numbers were. Kai wondered why her father had wasted a navigator's time on a run like this. The routes had all been mapped. She had current data cubes that should send the ship on automatic from one mapped jump point to another. They wouldn't need a navigator unless something went wrong. Riel Amat, senior pilot and second in command, 11 years with Vata Transport, and before that, a space service veteran. Lean, dark, clearly an islander like her. Her implant told her he'd been born on Little Gumbo. Kai wondered what he thought of her, if he knew why she'd left the academy. His expression gave nothing away. The least experienced, pilot junior Lee Quidlin, had only 2 years deep space as pilot apprentice on Andrea Salar, but he'd been born on Slaughter Key's main orbital station and had been planetside only during senior school. He had a broad, friendly face under a shock of taffy-colored hair. All solid, experienced personnel who could probably make this trip with no captain at all. She would have to prove herself. She would have to make no mistakes. With that thought, she went back to the paperwork. Undock and castoff went smoothly. Kai had nothing to do but sit in the captain's couch and watch her experienced crew do what they had done so often before. The tug towed them out to regulation distance and stood by while engineering powered up the main in-system drive and tested the backup. All functioned nominally. Glennis Jones set off on course with no fuss and no surprises. And with no speed. Functional, efficient in-system drive, though she had, it produced less than 80% of the acceleration of newer systems. It would be days, not hours, before they dared shift into hyper. Before anything disastrous was likely to happen. During those days, Kai tried to adjust to her new reality. No fixed schedule, no rapid alternation of classes, physical training, study periods. The empty hours seemed endless. Kai read and reread the manuals for every ship system and followed her crew around asking questions until everyone was snappish. They had seemed so level-headed before the journey. She worried about the possibility of contamination in the environmental system until on the fourth day, she overheard Tabai explaining to Bia Chalk, engineering second, that it was just new captain's disease, and they both laughed. She backed away, went to her cabin, and dosed herself with a soporific. 10 hours later, she awoke clear-headed and cheerful. Even Aunt Gracie's cakes didn't seem an insoluble problem. She could almost believe that someone, somewhere, might find them palatable, or useful as doorstops or something. She tried not to think about her past, and found that not thinking easier when surrounded by the worn fabric of old Glennis and the routine of a ship in passage. She set herself daily tasks, exercises both physical and mental. Day by day, she learned more about her crew, always uncomfortably aware that they were all older than she was, all more experienced. The youngest, Mihar Mahar, had still spent several years on ships.
How can I get them to respect me? How can they believe I'm anything but a rich girl, captain only by the grace of wealth?
She continued to study, pushing herself to disprove what she was sure they thought. At the end of each ship day, she wrote up her log, though it mostly consisted of one paragraph listing all systems as nominal. If a military life was long periods of boredom punctuated by moments of stark terror, as one of her instructors had said, then civilian life seemed to be long periods of boredom interrupted by moments of dismal reflection. Only now and again, she wondered what her classmates were doing.
I wonder what happened to Mandy Rocher. What is Hal thinking? Are the critical midterms coming up or just passed?
And put it quickly out of her mind. That was behind her. Now she had a mission, a job, and she could find some busy work to keep her mind occupied, and those moments of reflection few and far between. One of those mental occupations centered on the ship. Gaspard's words kept picking at her.
What if I can make enough in trade to buy Glennis, and fix her up and get her through an inspection, and own my own ship? Be an independent trader.
Like her ancestor. Her father would have a cat. Her father would have a full-grown mountain cat sprouting green-feathered wings and a forked tail. Her orders were very specific. Transport the goods, sell the ship, bring the crew home commercial on the profit. She knew if she did that, she would be offered another position. Maybe a better ship, maybe not, on another run. And in a few years, she could be captain of one of Vata's showpieces. Her mother would keep looking for suitable husbands. She would in time marry the scion of some other commercial family, someone from the energy field perhaps, or even lope ranching. Not Hal, of course. Even if they ever met again, even if he still cared for her, he wouldn't risk his career. She wouldn't let him risk his career, marrying a woman who had been expelled from the academy for a security breach. She would marry someone suitable for a rich commercial family, someone dull. She would leave ships, settle down, have a few children, work in the firm's head office. That put a chill down her back. The firm's head office, across town from the academy, plushly carpeted, paneled in solid wood of exquisite grain, with hand-woven drapes, custom desks the size of her bed at home, and soft-spoken staff waiting hand and foot on the senior members of the family. As a senior member of the family, she saw herself 20 years on, a formidable matron in a watered silk business suit in an office like her uncle's. She would interact with members of government, with the military. She imagined, so vividly that she broke out in a sweat, having to shake hands with one of her classmates. God's grant it wasn't Sumi, who was probably working off a dozen black points for not being satisfied with someone's explanation of where Kai had gone. God's grant it wasn't Hal. Whoever it was in uniform would know she'd been expelled in disgrace, and in that handshake express either pity or ridicule or something she didn't want to face. In the dark of her cabin, one sleep shift, she stared at the steady telltales, green, amber, orange, red, blue. If only they would blink or change their pattern, anything to distract her. But they glowed on, tiny colored eyes in the dark, staring at her. She reached out and switched on the bedside lamp. She was not going to take another soporific. She was not going to worry her crew. She looked around her cabin for something to do and saw McRoberts present.
She hadn't opened the box yet. Model building had never been her passion, but it was something to fill the hours between... She looked at the chronometer and shuddered. Now and breakfast. Inside the box, she found the expected jumble of pieces and a much-folded paper with directions in four languages. She unfolded it and found that someone had underlined some of the words in Balsish, yellow, and Visnuan, green. She turned it over. A few underlinings in Franco, orange, and fewer yet in Angla, red.
What is this supposed to... Oh.
MacRobert's storied past in covert ops. It must be some kind of puzzle, a test of her ability or something. She wasn't in the mood for any such test, or any secret pact with the service. She ignored the underlined words, and took out something that looked as if it should be the keel plate spine, and checked its stamped number against the list on the paper. It was the keel plate spine. She laid it aside and stirred the pieces with her finger, trying to spot the six portal struts that should, on this model, fit into the keel plate spine. She found five, but the sixth eluded her until she noticed the off-color piece she'd assumed was an exterior member because it was cream-colored, not gray. By breakfast, she had the keel plate spine and the portal struts assembled. The directions didn't explain why one portal strut was cream-colored, so she shrugged and put it in the number one slot. Possibly parts from different but similar sets had been mixed at the factory. Unless it was another part of Mac's test. But she wasn't in school now, and she didn't have to take any stupid test. After breakfast, she borrowed a magnifier and pair of needle-nosed pincers from Quincy Robbins' engineering shop and spent an hour peeling tiny warning labels off a strip and laying them carefully, right side up for the position of that part when the model was fully assembled, on the pieces that would, in real life, have such warning signs. Even with the magnifier, the Space Service logo was too small to read. By lunch, she had all the labels on. She made a quick tour of the ship and went back to work assembling the interior structural members. She slept that night without medication or early waking. When the lights came on for main shift, she stared at the model taking shape on her desk and decided to ration herself to 1 hour a day. She wanted it to last. She toyed with the idea of buying other models, keeping one always in reserve. 10 days later, when Glennis wallowed uneasily into Endym translation, Kai watched the strain gauges and wondered how the ship had passed its last inspection. She didn't miss the tension in Quincy's expression. Shipping out as a junior on one of the newer transports, she'd never had to worry about the ship's fabric coming apart, but now... Maybe it was her chance at glory, and maybe it was her chance to die. Her crew seemed mostly calm about the noises and the vibration, though Lee had turned the color of bad cheese. Kai hoped she didn't match him. Once through translation, Quincy shrugged and shook her head.
I didn't expect that much wobble. Still, it ought to be good for the number of translations we have scheduled, plus a few more.
Glennis settled back to being an old but not unsound ship. The telltales that should be green were all green. The ambers were amber. The few reds, indicating emergency systems on live standby, were red. Over the next few days, Kai Lara checked in with her crew every few hours, but spent the rest of the time running cost-benefit analyses.
I won't actually do it. I can't do it. It's impossible in every way. But it can't possibly hurt to figure out what it would take just as an exercise.
Better than imagining herself in an office in port, entertaining her classmates in uniform. Better than finishing the model too soon and having nothing to do with her hands. Pharmaceutical components to Belinta, 31% of estimated cargo value. Time limited, with a penalty for late delivery or non-delivery, and a bonus for... A time so short that Glennis couldn't have done it in her youth.
Well, no bonus, then.
Price prearranged, profit guaranteed, and non-negotiable. That wouldn't do it, though it put them well on the way to the tickets home from last way.
Then what? The bales of fabric scraps, old clothes, actually, for Leonora? The raw zeer nuts, the crates of modular components for last way? My own crate of luxury goods,
The hand-blown crystal bowls and vases, the bolts of silk brocade.
The numbers didn't add up. If they were very, very lucky, they might, possibly, make enough to equal what the ship would bring for scrap. They could not possibly make enough to equal that, plus the cost of renovations to meet inspection standards. Kai called up the inspection standards for the third time. Nobody cared if their holds were inconvenient, though some trade stations would charge a premium for space to ships that could not use automated freight handling systems. But the environmental system, drives, navigation, and communication systems, those had to pass. While there were sections of space in which no one bothered with inspections, or rescuing those whose ships weren't sound, she didn't want to go there. She doodled on a spare pad.
What would it take, really? What am I willing to give up? Or, since I am now in the business of trade and profit, what am I willing to trade?
Customs at Belinta, their first port of call, should not have been a problem. Kai shifted from one foot to the other and struggled not to point out that every single item on the delivery manifest, raw materials for pharmaceuticals, had been pre-ordered. The customs inspector was an unmodified human, but she had seen a Moby and a pair of Indas on the way to this office, and she wanted to see what other Humods were in the system. Finally, the customs inspector looked up from the readout and glared at her as if she had sprouted horns.
We see more than enough of you slaughter key hotshots. Always trying to convince us our tariffs aren't reasonable. I bet you wouldn't like it if we did that.
Kai refrained from pointing out that Belinta couldn't reciprocate whatever injury they felt they suffered. They didn't have the bottoms to haul their own freight anywhere out system. Vada Transport didn't need more enemies.
We have only approved cargo, aside from what's in personal stowage, which is all locked down.
The customs inspector looked at the list again.
Pre-ordered pharmaceutical precursors. That gives us value added and tick extract. All right. What about agricultural machinery?
Kai wondered what they had against agricultural machinery.
Not on manifest. Is that... Do people try to smuggle in ag machinery?
No, we're looking for it. It was supposed to arrive last year. We hoped you'd have it, since you're from Slaughter Key.
A Vada ship?
No, Pavrati. They're the blue and white ones, right?
Pavrati did indeed have blue and white colors. They were based on Serenata, not Slaughter Key. Though they registered their ships in Slaughter Key, they dominated the coreward trade. Vada held an equal share in the outer ranges.
The ship didn't arrive?
Well, a Pavrati ship came, but no machinery. They said it had all been diverted.
Sold off, more like.
Pavrati interstellar shipping was the example held up to young Vada trainees of how not to operate a shipping line. Rumor had it they survived by running contraband.
We tried to contact the company, Pavrati headquarters, and the shipping agent for the manufacturer. We haven't heard anything. And we've asked every ship that's come by. We've heard nothing.
Belinta was a good 100 years behind Slaughter Key in development. A missing shipment like this could cause them real trouble.
I'm sorry, but I don't know anything about it. If it's a Pavrati contract, I doubt the manufacturer would send a replacement by Vada.
The customs inspector looked at Kai as if she could create agricultural machinery out of thin air right in front of him.
We told them next available. We really need it.
Who are you calling on this?
I'm not sure. I just know we're looking for it. But the Economic Development Bureau can tell you more. If there's any way at all that we can get something. We lost a year's production already.
Kai opened her mouth to deliver a standard apology, but the words wouldn't come. Possibility tickled her ambition. Could this turn into a lucrative contract? Lucrative enough to repair the ship? Almost impossible, but...
Does the Economic Development Bureau have an office on station?
What? Oh, no, Captain. You'd have to go planet side. You'd have to have an appointment. You do have a consul here, of course.
Of course.
Kailara had orders to visit the Slaughter Key legation on every planet, to be polite and charming and give nothing away while gathering any useful information to be passed back to the family. A very boring duty, but an excuse to wear the scarlet-lined formal cape, which she liked in spite of herself.
But you'll try?
I don't know. I'll have to consider what it does to the rest of my schedule. I'll think about it.
Kai was already thinking about it. She was already imagining a fat contract that would give Vata Transport Limited leverage in this system, and herself a ship in which she had owner's shares. A contract whose negotiation would excuse her spending a few more days downside, exploring her first alien world. Before she left the station, Kai made her reservation at the Captain's Guild, an acceptable expense chargeable to the company. She also placed a call to the escort service Vata Transport used. A captain never prowls about alone. If no senior crew accompanies, a captain will hire an escort from the usual service, list appended. Belinta was supposed to be a safe port, but this was her first voyage. She would take no chances. Executive escort promised to have a suitable individual on call when she arrived. She chose to meet the escort at the Captain's Guild. On the down shuttle, Kai leafed through travel brochures she would never use, such as Beautiful Belinta, Belle of the Hub Worlds. Nobody but the residents would call this sector the Hub Worlds, unless they thought the rest of the wheel had fallen off. Belinta advertised unparalleled cultural opportunities, scenic sights, and marvelous experiences for the value-conscious traveler. The cultural opportunities looked like a group of people in costumes singing something, and the scenic sights looked like a cliff over an ocean. Kai wondered what kind of brochures Slaughter Key handed out to tourists. She wondered if Slaughter Key had any tourists. She turned over some of the others. Salzon's Singing Sands, far across the planet, looked like piles of gray dirt, but the Singing Sands luxury resort promised unparalleled self-indulgence amid the shimmering dunes. See the sights of mystic Valros Valley, showed a mountain valley with a large red arrow pointing to the Mystic Valley luxury resort perched on a cliff on one side. Mystic Valley's hostelry promised the same unparalleled self-indulgence as well as horseback tours to Spirit Falls. More interesting, at least in the brochures, was the Sea Isle Reef Extravaganza Tour, with stays in the Sea Isle Luxury Resort promising the now familiar unparalleled self-indulgence. The brochures were archaic, class film, with inert illustrations and no link-up codes. Kai put them aside for the next passenger to enjoy as the shuttle landed. Belinta had only one shuttle port near its capital. Kai caught the city center train using the coupon from the brochure. No humods on the train, a disappointment. Aside from the dull clothing, everyone seemed normal. She came out of the grimy, strange-smelling station across a paved street from the Captain's Guild, a dark brick building in a row of other dark brick buildings, with the starred flag of the Captain's Guild waving in a gentle, warm breeze over the entrance. Kailara had been to the Captain's Guild with her father back on Slaughter Key, where he, like all the Vata senior captains, was personally known to all the service personnel. But this was her first time to enter a guild house in her own right. She half expected the doorman to ask for her ID or suggest that she wait in the visitor's lounge for her father. She resisted the impulse to flick her dress cape back from her sleeves to reveal the rings and walked toward the door as if she owned it. The doorman at the Captain's Guild opened the door for her at once, and the on-duty steward met her in the lobby.
Captain Vada, a pleasure. Right this way, please.
Oh, of course.
Their implants would have picked up her ID before she arrived. Her overnight bag disappeared with a bellboy up a flight of stairs. The steward led her to the registration desk.
Just to check that everything's in order.
It was. Kai looked automatically at the status board. Princess Corey, Captain R. Stennis, Independent. N.R. L.P.O.C. Vauxhan. Pier K., Captain J. Singh, Independent. R. L.P.O.C. Local System. Glennis Jones, Captain K. Vata, Vata Transport Limited. R. L.P.O.C. Slaughter Key. She made herself quit looking at her own name on the status board, Captain K. Vata, right out there in public, and tried to extract from the simple list all the information she could. Two independents, one staying in the guild house and one not. Pier K was probably an in-system rig, Kai wondered what she carried and to and from whom.
Your room, Captain. Number 6, second floor. You require assistance?
No, thanks.
Will you need us to arrange an escort?
No, thank you. I've contacted a service already. I'll call them again from my room and let them know I've arrived.
They should have met you at the port, unless you requested that they not.
I said here would be fine, but thank you.
Kai ignored the elevator and went up the carpeted stairs to the second floor, where a single short cross hall made it clear that the Captain's Guild on Belinta didn't expect much business. Her room overlooked the street, and although it contained all the amenities the Captain's Guild promised its members, it was smaller and plainer than the room her father had shown her back at Slaughter Keys Guild residence. Kai turned on the comm console and uplinked to her ship, giving them her on-planet contact codes. Then she called executive escorts, where the same pleasant voice promised to send someone over immediately. She had just unpacked when the desk called to tell her that the escort had arrived. Back on Slaughter Key, Vada had its own security personnel, wearing company colors. Kai had never dealt with outworld security firms before. The stocky young man in dark green tunic and brown pants looked nothing like the Vada employees, but his ID patch fit the information she'd downloaded from the escort service. Connor Fadden, senior operative, certified and licensed to carry those firearms deemed appropriate for private hires on Belinta. He had the little bulge in the left temple that indicated an implanted skull phone, and the larger bulges under his tunic that must be his weaponry.
Mr. Fadden?
He turned from the desk.
Captain Vada? You're not the same Captain Vada.
No. It's my first run here. Your credentials, please?
The Captain's Guild staff would have checked already, but Gary had impressed on her the need to check everything herself.
Of course, ma'am.
He handed over a data pack. Kai ran the hand scanner over it, clean, and then offered hers to his hand scanner. He took his ID pack back and straightened.
Where first, Captain?
The Slaughter Key Legation. If it's close enough, I'd like to walk.
Easily close enough. Just across the street and down a ways.
He led the way to the door, and then out onto the street. According to the captain's guide, escort services could provide a range of services, but the only one authorized on the company account at Belinta was Guide Basic Protection. Kai felt a strange combination of young and important as she walked with her armed escort along the street of a city on a planet she'd never seen before. It smelled different. People dressed in different colors, different styles. Although Belinta was supposed to have nominal normal gravity, her feet didn't seem to hit the ground with the same impact as on Slaughter Key. Kai tried not to gape at the sights, keeping her eyes firmly on the Slaughter Key flag which her escort had pointed out a short walk away. When they got to the Slaughter Key Legation, she nodded to the guards at the gate and handed them her ID pack. They nodded back, ran a scanner over it, and opened the gate for her. Her escort paused. The guards checked his ID, then allowed him into the gatehouse. Kai walked on up to the door. Another uniformed guard opened it for her. Inside, the legation's reception area had tiled floors and cream-colored walls hung with tapestries representing the 6 colonies. Kai handed her ID pack to the desk clerk, a cheerful middle-aged woman who ran it through a reader and returned it.
Need to see the consul, Captain Vada?
Yes, a matter of trade and profit.
It's always nice to see a Vada representative here. A Tizan, perhaps? I will inform the consul that you wish to see him.
Thank you.
Kai sat in the comfortable chair the clerk pointed out and looked through a window into a covered garden filled with Slaughter Key natives. Not, of course, a teak tree. She sipped the Tizan the clerk brought her. The consul appeared quickly. He looked like a northerner. His ID patch provided a name, Parin Inosie, and a brief biography. Kai ignored it. Her own wiring would store it for her.
Ah, new Vada on this run. Trade and profit, you say?
A Pavrati shipment. Ag machinery that didn't arrive on the last Pavrati ship. Customs say they asked for a next shipment priority. I want to bid on it.
Does Vada approve?
How can he ask that when the main office is light years away? Oh.
Kailara was Vada here.
So does Vada stand behind this venture, or is it personal, a captain's gambit?
She could commit Vada to a course of action that would not play out until after she returned shipless, the old hulk sold, Or she could work this solo and, if it came out as she hoped, use the profits to refit the ship. If it didn't, she would be out of luck, but Vata wouldn't be harmed. She had not thought that far. She felt stupid that she had not thought that far.
I have not decided. There are advantages either way, for me, my family, and Slaughter Key. More information would help, and that is why I have come here. I would like to know...
Her mind raced through the decision matrices, noting blank cells she most wanted filled.
I would like to know Pavrati's trading history here, and where that could be found. The customs employee I spoke to, Inspector Junior Amadisi, directed me to the Economic Development Bureau, which he said had tried to find out where the shipment went astray and obtain a replacement. I need an introduction to that bureau.
Oh, indeed. Well, some of this I can help you with, certainly. Pavrati began yearly contacts here some 6 years ago and increased their service to twice yearly 2 years ago. The initial contact of my predecessor with the Pavrati concerned a customs dispute about interdicted psychoactives. Recently, let me say that it would be indiscreet of me to complain that Pavrati captains have been a plague to this office for years, always demanding, never asking. So I would not say that. I would say that if Vada brought trade and profit out of this, it could only help my office perform its duties and possibly improve relations between governments.
Kai wondered how much incentive from Vada had contributed to his attitude, or if Pavrati captains had really been stupid enough to alienate their own government's consul repeatedly. She remembered those entries on the books, something she'd questioned back in what now felt like distant youth. "We don't bribe people, do we?" she'd asked in horror, only to be glared into silence by her father and uncle. It was not a bribe, they'd explained. It was merely a courtesy, too small to do more than suggest that Vada Transport was a friendly and cooperative entity.
"I was hoping you could inform me of local law and custom in such matters."
"Oh, easily. You see, these people distrust outworld traders as naturally as they breathe air. They consider us all cast in the same mold and blame any of us for all of us. If you were to make good on a promise Pavrati made, they would be very surprised and probably indecently grateful. As for Pavrati's reaction, they don't care. There are no statutes requiring notification of intent."
Kailara thought that over for a long moment while the consul finished his own tizan. She could commit Vada, or she could go independent. She had just made a huge blunder going independent at the academy, but this was different. Here, she hoped, that boldness protected the family.
"It's my venture."
"Oh, first command, I assume. Ah, yes. You Vada seem to run to adventures on a first voyage in command."
No one had told Kai about that.
"I am not looking for adventure, trade and profit."
"Oh, certainly. Only fools look for adventure. But I dare say your orders didn't mention scooping Pavrati contracts. Not that I'm asking."
Kai didn't know whether to be annoyed or amused at the twinkle in his eye.
"The customs inspector mentioned an economic development bureau."
"Oh, yes. Hidebound, stuffy, and suspicious, like all these people. If they've been stiffed by Pavrati, they won't pay up front. But they're honest enough, and if you deliver the goods, they'll pay on good credit. I'll be glad to give you a letter of introduction. They still go in for that kind of formality, to the right office."
"Thank you. That's most helpful."
He shrugged, a very North Coast shrug.
"Well, anything to relieve the tedium. It's normally months between ships, with nothing much to do in between but listen to their complaints. You can't believe how tedious these people are. Imagine, for amusement, they play some idiotic game with sticks and balls on horses, of all things."
"Polo?"
"Well, something like that. You know about it? I hadn't imagined that anywhere on Slaughter Key we had anything like that. I've never been on a horse in my life."
North Coast, Slaughter Key's industrial hub, considered themselves superior, North Coasters did. The rest of Slaughter Key, Kai suspected, felt as her family did about North Coasters. Necessary folk, but stodgy and proud.
"I've heard of it. We're expected to know a lot of customs from all sorts of places."
I suppose. Well, if you know enough to chat about Chuckles.
Kai realized he meant Chuckers.
You'll get along fine with them, or as fine as any of us can. But look out, they might ask you to get on a horse and play.
Oh, I think I can stick to trade and profit.
Well, then you'll have dinner with me this evening? I'll have a letter for you by then, and I'll call ahead as well to see when you might get an appointment. Where are you staying?
At the Captain's Guild. And thank you. What time?
8, local. I'll send the legation driver for you and put a ping on your alarm.
Outside, the moist air carried all the smells Kylara had imagined when, as a junior apprentice, she'd been stuck on the ship polishing the floor while the captain and senior crew were on planet. Here was a whole world she had never seen before. It was hard to believe she was really here, that she had just been talking to a consul, captain, to government representative. Her escort joined her at the gate.
Where to?
Kai just wanted to walk around, experiencing the strangeness. But that wouldn't do, not on a company account.
There is a harbor here, yes?
Harbors meant shipping, and shipping was her business. The escort pointed.
This way?
Kai called up a city map on her implant. He was leading her the right way. It seemed silly to check, but it was protocol. They started off still on foot. Around her, the native population of Belinta went about its business, dressed very differently from the people on Slaughter Key. Most wore some shade of green. Gray-green, greenish-brown, yellow-green, bluish-green, with a plaid shawl slung around the hips for the women, or shoulders for the men. Their legs were bare from the knee down to sandals with turned-up toes, but they wore long-sleeved tops with snug cuffs.
What's that about?
She slowed down, feeling the slight difference in the way her foot hit the ground, noticing the odd quality of the light and the smells.
What is that?
A gust of wind lifted her cape, and the smell grew stronger. Not unpleasant or pleasant, just enticingly different. The street they were on curved to the right and ended at a tangle of buildings, beyond which stretched an undulating surface of dirty yellow water. In the distance, she could see the dark, ragged line of another shore. She called up her infovisor. It was an ocean. Or rather, this was a bay, and the ocean lay off to the right somewhere. The greater ocean, on their maps. Ships carried cargo on that water, just as on Slaughter Key. She eyed them as she walked along the street that paralleled the docks. Big ones, little ones, in a bewildering variety of designs. High at the prow, with low, rounded sterns. High at both ends, with a straight, low section in the middle. She had no idea which design was meant for which service, and wondered if the escort might.
What kinds of cargoes do they carry?
A lot of it's wood. Over there, it's the mills. Behind them, the forests still. Food and fiber, too, from the farmland away east of here. Riverboats come down with ores and such from the mountains.
What kind of local transport organization?
Well, there's the Amalgamated Transport Trust. That's a group of shipping companies. They agree on rates and that kind of thing.
Kylara had already looked that up and was again a little surprised at herself for checking up on the escort service. Across the pavement on the shore side were tall, blank-fronted buildings, obvious warehouses, bearing names and logos which meant to this world much what Vata Transport meant to hers. Tall doors stood open. She toyed with the idea of going in and introducing herself to a manager or two, but the ships were too interesting. She could do that tomorrow if a data search suggested it might be profitable. She came back in time to dress for dinner.